We'll get back to that, Sherrod, because it's Legends Day, as you know, on a Wednesday on RSN. And today on the line, we have a very, very, very special legend in the world of football. One of the all-time greats, in fact. 269 games in the brown and the gold, a five-time premiership player, three-time All-Australian, best and fairest, two-time Norm Smith medal, if you don't mind. Big game champion, Australian Football Hall of Fame member, Hawthorn Hall of Fame member, and a VFL premiership coach twice as well in his coaching career. Amongst an unbelievable contribution to the game. And on this day, 1978, he made his debut for the Hawks. It is none other than Gary Ayres who joins us. Ayres, good morning.
Morning, Arf. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Very well. I like these moments. We can go back down memory lane and have a chat about special days in legends' careers. And this was one for you. The 5th of August 1978, Ayrsy, you played your first game for the Hawks in the number 33 jumper, just by the way, and kicked three goals. Where'd you play?
Well, it was very, very good day all round, Half, as you could well imagine when you get a call up for your first game. But I actually got a phone call on the Thursday night, and it was one of the very few phone calls that I got from the Hawthorn Match Committee to say that you played your first game. I think I'd only played about half a dozen reserve games, and I started on the interchange, and I actually was thrown into the midfield just before half time, if my memory serves me correct, and then was able to snag one off the ground, mate, and of course then probably pretty lucky because I think I was only about 3 metres out anyway, and after half time end up just playing half forward flank for the rest of the game. So it was a little bit all over the shop, but I'd originally come down from the country from Warragul as a 17-year-old lad, and started off as a forward, and who would have known all those years later, Half, that I would have ended up in the back pocket. So I probably thought you couldn't go too far back, mate, after that anyway, put it that way.
Yeah. So you're only 17. So you'd only been down there for 6 weeks, you were saying, from Warragul.
Yes, I'd been invited down as a young lad for the pre-season of 77 leading into 78. And anyway, as things turned out, Hawthorn thought that I probably, because of my age, would have been preferable to start off in the under-19s. And my father and a couple of the Hawthorn Match Committee had a bit of a chat and said, well, the kid's playing senior footy back at Warragul. He's against all the old dairy farmers and spud farmers. And, of course, if the cows didn't milk on the day, they got a bit angry. And if the spuds didn't run, they got a bit angry. So the old man said at the time, well, he might as well go back and play senior footy there. So anyway, Hawthorn, to their credit, just sort of kept tabs on me. And I came down, I can't quite remember the round, but we were playing out at Waverley and I was living in the country and it was a bit closer to travel. So I ended up playing in the seconds against Richmond on the Saturday. And then went back to Warragul. It was a long weekend, played Warragul on the Monday, and then the following Saturday played another reserve game. And from that point on, mate, so it was all a lot different back in those days.
That's amazing. And we often talk, Gary, about the likes of Michael Tuck and certainly Robert Diviadomenico that played a lot of reserves footy before they became a regular member of the Hawthorn senior team. And you were a bit the same. You played only 20-odd games in your first four seasons. So you were another one that had that foundation where you had to really earn your spot, I guess, before you got that regular position.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess when I came to the club in 78, they were pretty strong because they'd been obviously finalists and, of course, premierships throughout the early part of the 70s, and we were sort of starting off as a pretty young reserve side, and we happened to make the reserves grand final, and also two of the seniors made the grand final, and of course subsequently went on and won the grand final / premiership. So yeah, it was about, I guess, doing an apprenticeship, learning the Hawthorn way, and being indoctrinated into all the culture and just how great a club Hawthorn were. And I guess in the early days, as I said, I come from the country. I was a 17-year-old lad. I didn't have a licence, so to get to training, I was living out at Springvale, and you had to catch the train to Malvern, and then I caught the tram, and I tell you what, down Glen Ferry Road, there's a lot of stops along the way to get to Glen Ferry Road.
There is.
And you'd be waiting for someone to give you a lift at the end of training, and it was a little bit like being, I guess, the naughty boy outside the headmaster's room at school. I used to sit there with my bag, and I used to get a lift home by Calvin Matthews. He lived in Noble Park, and as I said, I lived in Springvale. So, yeah, but a lot of the players did go on and have really good careers. And I guess that grounding and learning about Hawthorn made you become a better player. And I guess it, they made you wait to try and get your opportunity. I don't think they gifted you games back in those days at Hawthorn. And I would probably feel that makes you a more rounded player, makes you appreciate it a lot more. And of course, then when your time finally comes, you want to certainly grab that opportunity and, yeah, hopefully stay in the senior side.
Gary, as a young 17-year-old coming to Melbourne from Warragul, what was it that you spoke about the Hawthorn way? What was it that struck you about Hawthorn that made it such a special club in the coming years?
Just the competitiveness, the family-type club atmosphere. And I remember they were very, very good to my parents when we arrived on that particular day out at Footscray. And, of course, how they were inclusive and just, I guess, the respect that they had for the people within the Hawthorn Football Club. And also, too, we got to remember that Hawthorn were a pretty ordinary unit when they first started back in the sort of early 20s, and I didn't play finals till about the late 50s. So you certainly were made aware that the club didn't want to go back to those old dark days. And, of course, you know, we had the revered figures of John Kennedy Sr., who certainly had spelled out previously what Hawthorn was about. And, of course, there were times where you'd listen to the older players about how they would lose a close game, and, of course, they would go back to Glen Ferry Oval and there'd be someone on the piano, there'd be another one on the banjo, and they'd be having a good old time. But, of course, that was through the 60s when, obviously, they'd won their first premiership in 61. So, yeah, and then again, when I got older and, of course, became sort of vice-captain and captain, then, of course, it was up to us to pass the baton on to the younger players that were coming through. And, of course, I guess as we all saw in the mid-90s, and Daniel was probably around there at that time, maybe a tad later, that, of course, the club could have folded. And, again, great people stepped in and saved the club. And, of course, now we're probably the most successful club for the last 20, 25 years. So, again, being able to stay within a system, being able to enjoy one another's company, the chemistry, the camaraderie, the closeness, and I think that helps a lot to stay within a system that gives you success, and that's what all the Hawthorn boys want to do.
Yeah, I mean, you were so lucky to have so many amazing athletes around you through that period of time. Is there one that stands out for you? If you were to pick one, who was the best player that you played with at Hawthorn?
Oh, that's pretty difficult, Sherelle. There might be a few of the boys listening to this early in the morning because of COVID. So,
they all love the show, Izzy.
That's right. I love them all. And I just love playing with those group of boys who went through that time in the late 70s to early 90s. But I guess if I was playing in finals and grand finals, which we're lucky enough to do over a long period of time, probably one of the big-time players for me would have been Dermot Brereton. And we know how tough Dermot was and the things that he had to go through to play games. And, of course, the 89 grand final stands out with him being poleaxed in the first 10 seconds, basically, and Dipper and all the other guys that paid the price. But I'd probably say Dermot, but that's not certainly in any way showing disrespect to all the other boys that I played with because, as you said, Sherelle, I did play with some mighty superstars of the Hawthorn Football Club, and we wouldn't have been that good if those guys all weren't coming through at the same time. And obviously, we're also able to add players along the way, you know, selective recruiting. Jason Dunstall was a superstar. You know, Darren Pritchard, Johnny Platton, one of the best small players that ever played the game, especially for Hawthorn, obviously. Chucky, superstar in longevity. But there are other guys that played their roles as well. So, all in all, I was pretty lucky to be part of that great side.
And that the start of that great side was sort of in 83, and was your the first year you really played most of the season. You played 36 games in your first 5 years, and 83 years you played 18, including the win over Essendon in the grand final. It was the first of seven grand finals in a row, which is just ridiculous when you think about it. Did you realise at that time that there would be a dynasty coming your way, that the team and the coach was so tight and so good that it would survive that period of time, or was it just enjoying the moment while it was there?
No, I thought we were assembling a pretty good team, Daniel. It was probably started in 82 and were able to then sort of just get that, I guess, group of guys that were starting off together. And don't forget John Kennedy Jr. and Peter Schwab and Chris Mew and, of course, Dermot, as I mentioned before. And then you had the likes of Chris Langford coming through. And Of course, Hawthorn didn't play finals 79, 80 and 81, which was very unusual considering, as I said before, about the amount of finals and then what we're able to lead into. So I thought we were getting a pretty good side together. And when Alan Jeans came to the club, he was a coach that gave me enormous confidence. And I think that's the thing that we do sometimes as a coach. We can probably take confidence away from individuals, and we don't mean to do that, but, you know, we can make players play in positions that are foreign to them. So we need to arm them with all the right mental attributes to be able to go on and play footy and realise their potential. It takes a lot of hard work, as we know, but once Alan Jeans came to the club, Daniel, I thought we were on the right track, and, of course, it ended up showing that. But, hey, we won 83, as you mentioned, and I did find out pretty early on in footy, though, it's a great leveller, and I know we're talking about my first game, but we played Richmond the following week. I sat on the interchange bench again, got two kicks, and then got the flick the following week. So that's how quickly things can change. And obviously, 83 we won and won well. It was a great feeling to win your first premiership, because that's what all young players or any VFL, AFL player aspires to. But then we lost 84 and 85 to those dirty mugs, Essendon, Daniel. So we had the right team in 86, which we did. So, yeah, very, very thankful, mate.
It was an amazing time. Just on Jeansy, say he was able to fill you with confidence. How did he do that? What was his mechanisms or the way he did that for players? Because seemingly that's a very consistent theme from anyone you talk to who, particularly early in that phase when he got to Hawthorn, he was able to change the mindset of a lot of players. How did he do it?
Yeah, I think the two things that stood out in my mind were the way he communicated to me. And I was, again, as I said before in the conversation, come from the country. I just wanted to play footy. And, of course, maybe at the time I didn't really embrace, appreciate the other things that you had to do to prepare yourself to play footy. And we're only really semi-part-time anyway. And, of course, I'd just grown up just loving footy so much and basically had a football wherever I went and played footy as a kid on a Saturday and a Sunday. So his communication and the way he spoke to me, but also to the relationship building process that he went through as well, and how he made me feel and how he made me think about my footy. And as we know, Alan used to make it sound pretty fundamentally based. And, of course, as you know, Daniel, the old sausage theory that Yabby had, you could curry them, boil them and fry them, but they're still just sausages. And I think when he applied those life skills to us individually, it made us really feel that we were pretty worthwhile and that we did have some talent. And, of course, it was up to him and obviously yourself for that matter to be given that opportunity, but then work hard to then make sure that you realise what you can get out of it. And I think if I had to nail the two things, that would be communication and relationship building as well.
There's not too many people, Ezzy, that have won two Norm Smith medals, and you're one of those. And also just that whole thing about being a defender and winning a Norm Smith medal, because there have been quite a few that have done that over the time. Explain to our listeners what you thought your strengths were as a defender and what brought the best out of you in the big game.
Yeah, that's a bloody good question, actually. It's interesting when you try and reflect back, and, of course, even though you said I was a defender, as I always tried to get myself out of that defensive 50, to be honest. And, of course, the forwards I played on, a lot of them used to take me up into the midfield, and I always thought that I could actually read the play reasonably well, and I think I was a good mark for my size. But, of course, when you play for about 15 or 16 years, the opposition worked out that I was probably battling for a little bit of overall pace, so they took me back to the goal square and I battled a little bit there, but it took them quite a few years to work out, so maybe those forwards aren't as smart as they think they are anyway. and of course, but funnily enough, in the grand finals, in especially 86 and 88, I ended up actually going into the midfield. I was playing on David Rees-Jones in 86. Yep. When we won the grand final, because David had been a match winner in the second semi-final, so Yabby had actually gone to our, I guess, debrief the Friday before with a certain set plan, and that was obviously to play on certain players. Lucky enough that I was able to curb David's influence, and in 88, Chris Whitman actually ended up hurting his elbow, and he had to go off early, and I was playing on Greg Healy, and I actually, again, went up into the midfield, so...
Right.
From a defensive point of view, I certainly tried to get away from our own goals and maybe Chrissy Mew and Chris Langford and Andy Collins used to think, geez, I've got to cover my man as well as Izzy's man as well. But when I got a little bit older and I started pulling rank a little bit, they didn't say too many issues with me getting up the ground a bit further. So, but defensive was about trying to get it out of your area as quickly as possible. Being able to read the play, I think my skills were pretty reasonable. And again, as I said, I wasn't a bad mark for my size. So I think if you combine all those, you're probably going through your processes and the way you prepare and plan. And obviously the way Hawthorn played, it was trying to move the ball as quickly as possible out of defence and get it into our forward line to score.
Ezzy, if you combine all those things, it's a pretty good package. And that says what he said, two Norm Smith medals. One of those, as you mentioned, was in the 88 grand final. 96 points was the winning margin that the Hawks had that day over the Demons, Melbourne Demons. Can you tell us what that experience was like? And I guess there's a point in time when you're that far ahead that you know you're going to win the game before the final siren. What was it like playing out on the G in front of so many people on the, you know, one of the biggest days of your sporting career, and knowing everything just clicked into place and went so well?
Yeah, pretty special, Sherelle. There's no doubt about that. And I guess one of the things that Yabby thought from my own personal point of view was, the greater the challenge or the bigger the challenge, he always used to think that I used to knuckle down and want to embrace that challenge and actually play better. So I think that was probably something that he thought I needed at different times. And we're all coming off that 87 loss as well to Carlton in a pretty disappointing grand final. And running out onto the MCG grand final day is one of the most exhilarating feelings, uplifting. It's almost like you're running on air if you're actually going down the race, and then you see the big banner, and of course you run onto the ground and it is absolutely deafening, the sound that you first hear, because you're locked away underneath in the change rooms at the MCG just going about your business to prepare. And then it was a bit of a wet day early, and we'd certainly heard a little bit of, I guess, gossip that Melbourne were going to come out and potentially test us a little bit physically. Well, I don't think we're overly concerned about that, to be honest, because we'd been there that many times before and we had the experience. And certainly I think we had some players who could handle any sort of stuff that Melbourne were going to throw at us. And we sort of battled a little bit with inaccuracy, I think, from memory early on. And then we got our mojo and our game going in the second quarter, and we just went into half-time in a very, very strong position. And you never say that you're obviously going to win the game, but you're feeling pretty happy because you know you're a reasonable way in front. Melbourne had had a lot of finals previously during that final series. And then when we came out in the third quarter and Dermot's kicking goals from everywhere, Paul Abbott, Jason Dunstall, it was just really driving home that advantage, to be honest. And then we got to three-quarter time, and I think we'd had some scars from the previous losses, and we just wanted to make sure that we were dominant all over Melbourne, as the result shows. Played the game out to the end, and yeah, we're pretty happy. And also too, it was a driver, I guess, for the next year as well, because we got back into an opportunity to win back-to-back flags, and that was a driver during those 80s, and we'd missed out on general, I guess, opportunities through 84 and obviously 87 as well. So, but amazing feeling. It's what you play footy for. And yeah, when you win, it's all worthwhile. And you appreciate all the pre-seasons when it's 40 degrees and the sacrifice that you make. So yeah, pretty happy to walk away with obviously five premierships. One would have been magnificent, but yeah, five is awesome. There's no doubt about that.
An amazing career and contribution to the game as a player. We'll have to get you back one day, Izzy, for the coaching years as well, and do a legend series on your coaching time as well. Some great stories to be told there. But nice to relive today. It's 1978. It's a few years ago now, Izzy, but a great career on the back of it. We appreciate your time as always.
Yeah, good on you guys. No wonder the hair's snow white now, Daniel.
At least you've got some, mate. At least you've got some. Good stuff. The great Gary Ayres with us as part of the RSN Legends Series. What a player. A good driver in heavy traffic, as Alan Jeans used to describe him. Conan, that big mullet. Fantastic.